Good day, and welcome to another Forge Side Chat podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy focus on talent in the Great White North. But today we're sitting down with a lady from down south. You're in Delaware still, or where are you at?
I'm in Delaware.
There you are, hey? Awesome. So this is Ellen Durkin sitting down with us today from Iron Maiden Forge. Good day, Ellen. How are you doing?
I am good. I am definitely semi in the south compared to you. I did not know I was talking all the way to Canada.
Yeah, I'm up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, or Winterpeg, as it's better known as. And my name is Lando, the Abstract Blacksmith. So today we're going to dive deep into what Ellen's doing with her ironwork. She's an instructor at the Delaware College of Arts and Design. Is that right? Did I get that right?
That is correct.
Awesome.
Unless somebody wants to hire me elsewhere.
Well, your work is amazing. Everybody on the Instagram that goes and checks out Iron Maiden Forge, you'd just be blown away. And there's so many people that are blown away by your work. You've been all over the place with different conferences through the CBA. I know you did an awesome thing with them. You do fashion shows, and your work is unlike almost anybody else's work. You bring such a unique thing to the blacksmithing world. It's absolutely fascinating what you do with iron, and I am super, super stoked to bring you on the show today so we can dive a little bit into maybe how you do that, some of your processes that you use, some of the tools that you use to do that kind of stuff, and just kind of get a general idea of who you are and what makes you tick, eh?
We do want to know what makes me tick.
Well, let's start off with, where did this start for you? What got you into ironwork?
Well, I started in art school, so I have a master's degree in fine art, and I got into sculpture probably my fourth year in undergrad. And then I was doing a lot of welding and kind of fabricating different structures. And then from there, when I was in graduate school, my school had like this kind of like half-assed little forge thing, and I didn't have any like proper instruction, but they had a forge there, and I started sticking metal in it and heating it up and like bending it and just smashing the crap out of it generally, because I was trying to make these sculptures, but I wasn't really sure of how to like get there.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of welding at the time, and then I was sewing like fabric and like rubber and all these different other materials on top of the steel.
Oh.
Then at some point, I just stripped off all of the material and just started working with this steel. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, I can make this material. I can manipulate this material in a similar way to drawing, because I do a lot of drawing. And it just gave me, like, another outlet to, I guess, three-dimensionally draw. And then I was always interested in the figure. Even early on in my work, I was always drawing the figure or taking references from the human body. Then eventually, my first series of work were these wearable dress cages for my thesis, and I put 6-7 women in these very not structurally sound, like, murder traps, for the lack of a better term. So I made these things, and I was like, "That was my thesis." And I put like nude women in them for my thesis, and we didn't do a trial run or anything. I was just like, "All right, show's on, guys, we're gonna do it." So we put everyone in the things, and then we opened the gallery doors, and it was good for like 30 minutes or so before one of my models passed out. And then I was like, oh, God.
Passed out from what?
Well, she was in like 24-inch cast iron shoes in like a big metal dress container. And she was already like 5'10". So she was like very tall. And then she locked her knees. And then apparently that makes you pass out. So
gnarly.
Yeah. So then that happened, and I was like, all right, well, maybe we should try and make things a little bit more structurally sound at the very least. And after that, I started building things in separate pieces because I thought it would be cool if they could be like walked around in kind of more like a traditional runway show or performance. And I was like, well, what if all these pieces could be like moved around in? And then I started building things in separates. And then that's kind of what, that's I guess like the short version of how I ended up here. Because I didn't wake up one day and was like, I'm going to be a blacksmith. That's what I'm going to do with my life.
Oh, for sure. What kind of forge was it that they had at the school? Was it a coal forge or gas forge?
No, it was like a gas forge that was meant for like sheet metal bending.
Oh, gnarly. That's, so it's like, was it wide open type thing?
Yeah, it was wide open. It was not like, now I know it was not like what I was, it wasn't productive for what I was trying to do because I'm sticking these little pieces in there and it's just like it's heat everywhere. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just like.
You could have closed off the sides with more bricks if you had.
Yeah, that's what I ended up doing. I ended up putting like blocks on the sides, but like the amount of gas that thing was pumping out, I was like, well, good. At least I got a, you know, I'm paying enough to be here. I might as well burn all the gas in the studio. Like.
So, okay. Why did you go into art school?
Well, originally I was not going to go to art school. I always did art. I always liked art. I started doing ceramics when I was probably like 10 or 11. And I always took art classes and like drawing classes and all of that. But when I was, thinking about like what I wanted to like do with my life and like how I like wanted to like make money and be like a real adult person, I was like, well, art is not super pragmatic. So like, let's be reasonable. Mm-hmm. And so I started off in nursing and I was a nursing major at the community college. And I was also taking art classes at an art school. So I was like, oh, I'll just do both. Like, you know, and I was like, we'll just do art on the side and then we can like have a stable future and income and like live like a normal person. But now we know what Ellen did, so.
So life hasn't been exactly the most stable road, is what you're saying.
No, but I took like a bunch of prerequisites for my nursing major, just like the regular generic ones, your psychology and your math and your English and like all those things that kind of transfer to something else if you, you know, change your mind. And obviously I changed my mind because I was like, I don't want this. Mm-hmm. And then I went to art school full time. And then I just went to more art school full time. And now it's like I'm too stubborn to not do it. So it's too late. People were like, you could go back. And I was like, absolutely not. We have too much attitude at this point.
Okay, so what, back to you're 10 years old and you're into ceramics. What the heck happened there? How did you get into ceramics so young?
Well, I was homeschooled and people were like, that explains a lot. Oh, well, I took ceramic classes at like, there was a local art center that had classes and then my mom would kind of just drop me off there and I would just sit there and do ceramic things and throw pots. And I was just like me and like a bunch of like women that were like mostly retired women. So they were just like in there because, and I was like, wow, now I'm like an adult. I'm like, what would it be like to be retired and be able to do things? That's insane.
I don't know. You could have done, you know, what is it? 30 or 40 years of nursing and then retired and done something like that, right? And
I know, then I would be so like confused and jaded.
Well, and you would have like, missed out on all this jaded fun that you're having.
I know. Right. My rotator cuff wouldn't be like having all of the funsies and
yeah,
stuff like
still having
that.
Issues with it, eh?
I mean, you know, I don't think your body or my body wants to swing hammers like we're cavemen, but I'm like, we're gonna do it. It's like, why would you do that? You could just go do normal people things.
What for? That's what normal people are for.
I know.
We're not.
Yeah, that's true.
We're not normal people.
So basically, I was almost. I almost tried to be a normal person. Yeah,
I did too. I tried to go to computer programming, frick.
Yeah. And then at some point, something clicked in your head, and you were like, oh, I'm going to hate this.
Yep. Totally, dude.
Yeah. So if you're like doing something, you're like, I really hate this. Maybe, I don't know, try and find a way to not do that thing that you absolutely hate.
Throw your life in the gutter and be a blacksmith.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I mean, okay, look at you now, though. You got a instructing job at an art college. Like, that's something to be pretty proud of.
I mean, except for your pay. Your pay is real garbage. Oh. So, yeah, I'm an adjunct at a college, but, like adjunct professors do not make all of the money, in case there's somebody listening to this podcast that's like, wow, that must be great. You still need to, like, subsidize your income with other things. And I've done all different kinds of work, and I bartended for probably, like, what, 7-8 years?
Yeah. That's a fun time there, right?
I mean, if I ever have to bartend again, I'm going to probably end up almost stabbing somebody.
So especially nowadays, people have gotten a little bit crazy, eh?
Oh, I think people have always been crazy. It's just now you can, like, document the crazy. I just have no desire to, like, go back to bartending. Sometimes it's like a whole other part of my life that I forgot I did. Mm. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was me. Oh, yeah.
I can relate to that, too, bud. That's weird.
Yeah.
So, okay, is your main shop at the school, or do you have your own shop space that you work out of?
No, my shop is outside the city, and then my apartment is in the city, and then the school is in the city. But it's kind of just like a home base because I travel a bunch.
Yeah.
So I'm not tied to this city necessarily. Okay.
So what's it like for you to get to your shop from your place? How far?
It's only like 15 minutes.
That's not too bad. That's nice.
It's not bad until I can, like, afford to, I don't know, afford to be alive or something. I don't know.
So what's your shop space like?
It's like a 2-car garage.
And you got that stocked full of, like, some awesome tools here, or what kind of?
Nothing crazy. Nothing like.
I have a lady that comes to visit the show just a sec. She'll be here right away.
Oh, are you talking about your tool?
Tools, lady, tools.
Random things.
I'm interested to know what you have stocked up in your shop. Like, you got an anvil, obviously, a forge, and
hammer. Yeah, I have like a 165-pound penning house, so it's not crazy big. And then I've got a coal forge. Your regular vices. I have a little tire hammer.
Nice.
And I've got like a big ass platen table thing that, like, mostly just absorbs all of the heat in the shop in the winter. Radiates freezingness.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't get as cold there as it does up here, I don't think, but I understand.
I have a wood stove in there, so I usually fire that up. Yeah, I fire that up, so, like, I'm not like a total whiny bitch when I'm out there touching everything that's freezing, and I'm like.
I mean, I have electrical heat in my shop, and come wintertime, my electrical bill goes from like 200 and something up to 6 something. It's brutal.
Yeah, but like, you can't work when it's like, when it's so cold.
Definitely not. Definitely. And I mean, I don't know, do you have any sort of chemicals that you store in your shop? You don't want those freezing either. So.
Yeah, I don't really have any like chemical things in the shop so much.
Like paint.
Besides, like, random
paints
spray paints
and stuff like that. Yeah, you got to watch out for paints freezing and stuff like that. It's not good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
But not too much. There's not crazy tooling in there. I would like a nice little air hammer. That would be kind of sweet. Mm. So maybe you'll get some magic money to buy one of those at some point.
Like a little Anning.
I was thinking the Indians.
Yeah, for sure. You'd go and talk to, what's his name, Jake Johnson?
Jake. Yeah,
something
John
like that. It's up here, it's Casey Valinsky that takes care of Ann Yang Hammers up in Canada. If anybody's looking for one.
Yeah,
of those.
I was eyeballing him. Mostly just like money to do the things is generally the problem since I did not become a nurse.
Yeah, but if you were a nurse, you wouldn't have time to do this.
That's true. I'd just be dealing with body fluids and stuff, and that sounds less desirable.
My sister was a nurse, and she gave it up to become a teacher. She said, the hours, the type of work you do is just, it's insane. It's so hard.
Yeah. What does she teach? High school kids or little kids? I mean, high school kids are little
kids.
Yeah,
no, I think it's elementary that she's teaching right now.
I could not teach elementary kids.
Pretty tough too, I'd imagine. Yeah.
At least like high school and college kids, you can half talk to them like they're people.
Yeah.
You can be like, well, get your shit together or don't get your shit together. It's fine.
You sure, you think you can handle a bunch of grade 11 students hitting on you all the time?
I would be like, I'd be like, what the fuck is your problem?
I don't know. Kids nowadays are a different bunch than when I grew up. That's for sure. I feel so old saying that. Holy shit.
Well, this round years of college kids are like 18. And I'm like, what are y'all like 12? And I'm like, what even generation are you? Like, what is happening? I'm like, I don't know what words you're using. What are you saying?
Yep, what happened? Hey, what do you mostly like when it comes to teaching at the college, what kind of stuff are you teaching there?
Just like your basic classes. So like all levels of drawing and sculpture, 3D design, figure drawing, figure sculpture.
Yeah. Cool. Or do you get them involved in the kind of making the dresses and wear that you do? Or?
No, not that. 'Cause it's only a 2-year school. So we don't have any facilities for like, doing any of that stuff.
Gotcha.
But I give them information for like craft centers that have scholarship programs and stuff if they are interested in doing any of like the craft side of things.
I skipped over something when we were talking about the shop stuff and the tools. One of the things that one of our co-hosts, Nick Fabre, always likes to ask our guests is, what's your go-to hammer when you're in the shop?
Oh, I have a custom hammer that John Williams of Guildworks made. Yeah, so that's my baby. I have two. I have like a rounding hammer that he did and a crossbeam.
Beautiful.
That is nice and curvy and stuff. But like when I teach the blacksmith class, I always like hide those. So like some of the students don't accidentally grab them and start smashing tools and stuff. I'm like, no, not my baby.
You're not the first person that's told me that they've got a hammer made by him that they absolutely love. I wonder if that was Celeste that was telling me that she's got hammers from she was bugging.
Mark Asbury does.
Yeah, Mark Asbury's some awesome stuff there, right? Jeez.
Yeah.
I've seen that you've taken a few classes recently, actually, with you took one with Fireforge, Peter Braspinix.
Was great. That was so much fun. I'm so glad because I never get to take classes.
What drove you to go take the class with him?
Well, his work is incredible and like his techniques and his design is super, I think, unique, and it's different than what I do technique wise and design wise. So it's nice to be able to see like how someone else works. And not only that, but like how someone else teaches and like their methods, because everyone has different teaching methods. But, like as a teacher, like it's nice to be able to take a class so you can see like different teaching methods. And it's like super stress free for me, because I'm like, I'm just in here doing things. I can be stupid and do these things, and I can mess up these things, and it's totally fine. No one's asking me any questions. But it was great. I would definitely recommend those classes. I applied for an art grant locally in Delaware. They have like opportunity grants, so they're like a small $1,000 grant. So I applied for that, and then I was like, please give me the money to do the thing. So I used that grant to take that workshop.
Sweet.
yeah, if I had like just like, you know, money to do things, I would take more classes. Mm-hmm. But turns out we are not rich and my parents had kids instead of money. So now we all have to suffer. Right. There's that.
Suffering is real. Bring on the suffering. Get Buddhist mantra.
So I tell my students, we can all suffer together.
Shoot. I had something that I was going to go on to there. Shoot.
I mean, I warned you that I get sidetracked really easily and that we probably needed an adult moderating this.
It's going to be both of us. I'm usually super bad for it. I had to pound down a cup of coffee and I still got a little bit here before we started because today was just brutal day, man. Just mind draining. Something went wrong at work and I was just pretty much waiting on emails, like hour long waits between emails all day. It just drained my brain to the point where I'm just like, ugh. I was really looking forward to getting home and like maybe jumping in the shop for a little bit right after work and try to get some stuff done there, but unfortunately that didn't happen. So
no, you actually gotta let your brain like just marinate and stare at a wall.
After this I'll jump in the shop, get some stuff done, that's for sure. What are you working on right now?
Right this second I'm working on a prototype for a conference in Florida. So I was trying to kind of knock out that it's a 2-day conference. And since when I do the conferences, I generally like to do like kind of like a one-off piece for the conference, which makes it a little bit more complicated for me. But
is that with
you're going to be crazy,
Faba?
Might as well be crazy.
Yeah.
So in Gainesville.
Oh, awesome. I just had a guest on from Gainesville a couple episodes ago, Blockchain Blacksmith, I think was his name. He's a knife maker. He's making some really cool Damascus stuff. Yeah. You play with Damascus at all?
I do not play with Damascus yet. Maybe someday I will.
I
would just say yet.
I want to incorporate Damascus into my artwork like big time, but it's like one of those things where one step at a time here, bud. One step at a time.
500 steps at once.
First time going to a FABA conference, or is that common for you?
Yeah, I think so.
How'd you get involved with FABA?
Yeah. Jordan, what's his last name? B something. I can't pronounce it, or I can't remember it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I can help you there. But anyways. Okay.
Bordstein something. He's gonna be like, "God, you totally destroyed my last name." He took a class with me in Virginia when I was teaching a workshop, and then I think through that, I'm teaching a workshop at his studio, and then I'm gonna do the conference. So I'm gonna teach like a 4-day workshop, and then do the weekend conference. So I think that's how that situation happened.
Would he be on Instagram?
Something like that.
Does he have a?
He's definitely on
Forge Instagram. Name.
I can pull it up.
Cool. Always like to
find it,
see other people's work, and get to know all the different blacksmiths all around the world.
Borselman.
Sorry.
Borselman. Jordan Borselman.
Cool.
See, that's why I couldn't remember it. I was like,
yeah, odd pronunciation there.
Crooked Path Forge.
Cool. Right on. Thanks, bud. Yeah. So what are you planning on doing at the at that again? You got a piece that you're working on right now that's...
Yeah, so it's going to be modified of kind of that, the moth. This is like a sketch for like the moth piece I did in California, but the California conference was like a solid 3-day conference, so I made like a modified version for the 2-day. So hopefully I can like pull that off in 2 days. But like I couldn't use any of the original dimensions that I had because all the scale's different. So
yeah, that moth piece is sweet, but, dude.
Thanks. Yeah, well this one's gonna be similar, but like smaller elements and possibly more simplified. I don't really know. I'm hoping that it'll be attainable in 2 days.
Did you? Okay, I'm jumping all over the place here because I'm thinking of the way you design your work, and then you just took this class with Peter Braspinex. Did you find yourself walking away from that, looking at your designs differently now, or?
Yeah, there's definitely like techniques that he uses and like layout plans. I'm like, oh, okay, okay, that's cool. That's cool. I want to use this kind of like format or this layout. And then just like the crazy forge welding that he does is pretty intense. So
you use forge welding quite a bit already yourself, or?
I don't use it, but I'm hoping to integrate it more into the pieces. Just to like see what else we can do. Yeah, I just like to try different things because sometimes, like, you know, if you stay put too long, you just kind of get bored with the same thing.
I hear that. I've been all over the map on that one too.
Yeah, it's good to try different things that you can challenge yourself, especially if something is like not a strong point for you. And it's good to integrate that. So when I make work, I try and like push it every time to be like, all right, let's try this technique or let's try this thing. And then if I integrate it into a piece, it like makes me do it. And then once I'm done the piece, I'm like, okay, next piece, let's do a thing. So like I have some like Chasing Refuse stuff that I really like to do. Like to get more into that.
That's something I wanted to ask you a little bit about, actually, because listening to the episode you had on Blacksmither Radio, you had two episodes on there, and I you must have had the
maybe I don't listen to that.
The first one must have been like when she first started the podcast, because there's like 30 episodes that aren't available if you try to look it up through podcast players.
Yeah, I did one like a million years ago,
And then you did a real short one with her right before the CBA conference where you did the moth demo, I think, with Dennis.
Yeah, that was a shorty one.
But during that, you were talking about the repoussé chasing work, planishing, using a lot of those terms that that sheet metal workers use, tinsmiths or silversmiths and stuff like that, right? Copper workers. That's a lot of those terms might not be familiar to a lot of people in the blacksmithing world that are more familiar with knife making and stuff like that, but are interested in the art world, right? So when it comes to stuff like chasing, repoussé, planishing, what do some of those terms mean? What's chasing necessarily? Is that like you do that on sheet metal, trying to get different forms for pictures and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So chasing and repoussé is a way of forming like steel or copper or silver, whatever metal, and then giving it shape and form. So like, it's like another way to like draw in steel. Or whatever. I like to do kind of like the higher raising. So when you're forming you're forming the copper, so you're heavily dishing it, and then you're filling it with pitch, which is like a pine tar substance to back it, and that creates like a hard surface, and then you can like basically chisel your lines into the material.
Okay.
You can do a lot of the forming over different metal stakes and stuff, or sandbags, or a wooden stump, I think is the word.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
There's different ways to form the metal, but I like that challenge. There's definitely artists out there doing some crazy chasing repoussé work, like Douglas Pirate is crazy repoussé.
Brought his name up on that episode.
Crazy. Yeah.
Have you got a chance to work with him yet?
We're friends. We haven't like worked. We've done conferences where we're like both demoing and stuff.
See how he works and does some of his work then.
Yeah, I would definitely take a workshop with him, though. That would be fun.
So, planishing. I know you mentioned you wish you had a planishing hammer, and I'm in the process of building my own mechanical planishing hammer versus using an air planishing hammer, just because.
For forming and stuff.
Yeah, like I saw. I want to say it was Cold Hard Art, I think is his name. You think he was one of the guys on that Metal Shop Masters show? Might have been the winner of it, actually. Okay. Sorry, but anyway. So, anyways, he for forming metal is called the Sosa hammer. It's like a mechanical planishing hammer.
There's a lot of auto body places have them. And those they can move metal way faster than my little arm.
Yeah. Can. Right. So, what's the point of a planishing hammer? Is that to push the material down in different directions or up in different directions, or is it stretching the material? What are you mostly doing on a planishing?
Both. It's for forming it. So they'll use those for auto body work. Armorers use them for forming your breastplates or whatever you're trying to move your material. You can do it by hand. It just takes a whole hell of a lot longer. So when I do the sheet metal work, usually I'm doing smaller pieces, boob cups or something like that. I'm not usually doing big things, but I do like doing sheet metal work. I think it's fun. It's a challenge. It's a different feel.
I'm really into it. I've done a little bit of I've made a bunch of roses and other little flowers and stuff like that, and that's what's really making me gravitate towards working with thinner copper and sheet metal and stuff like that. But I'm not into the world of planishing hammers and stuff like that yet, so I'm interested to know.
I mean, the more money you have, the better tools you can have.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of money, so I'm building a lot of my tools, such as the planishing hammer. Hammer as well. Where'd you get your tire hammer from?
There was I got it 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
15 years ago? I have no idea. A guy built it. He was in Maryland, okay. I think.
God.
The tire hammer is fine for more crude forging. Oh, yeah. It's not great for precision forging or if you want to put tools under it. That's a little jumpy.
More for just drying out and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, drawing out or getting a preform kind of done. But if you want one nice consistent hit or something like that.
That's where the air hammer comes in.
The air hammer would be nice. There's a lot more control.
What about a hydraulic press? Have you had a chance?
Yeah, that would be good. But for me, an air hammer would be more in my direction.
Have you played around with the...
Not that I would say no to a press in case anyone out there could give me a press.
Have you played around with one a bunch or...
No, not a bunch. But if I'm in a shop that has nice tools, I'm
right. I've got a gentleman lined up to come onto the show and talk about hydraulic presses a little bit coming up soon here, so we'll be able to get a little bit more insight as to what some people might want to get out of a hydraulic press when they're in the market shopping for one.
Yeah, I know a lot of the knife guys hydraulic presses. Oh, there's a child. I was why do I hear a kid?
I guess my kids.
The video lagged, so I just heard a child, and I was ghosts.
I'm kind of wondering if there was a lag going on at all, or if it was pretty bad. I asked, my kid was watching Netflix, so
there's a lag on mine, but I am connected to my internet, so it should be.
Yeah, you seem to be coming through good on my end.
Should be okay.
It's probably my internet slow on you.
All right, you're a little
pixelated. I apologize for that. I can turn it off if it makes you feel any better.
No, because then it'll be I'm teaching on Zoom again and I'm talking to nobody.
I like having the video.
I'm hi, everybody. And no.
I like having the video. I've had some people bug me that I should record it and put it on YouTube, but I'm I don't know. It's, to watch this? For what?
Then you get all the mannerisms and the hand waving and all that stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know. I kind of want to make it something because it could be something, but I feel at the same time I don't have what it takes to make it something. I don't know. I pick my nose too much or something. Maybe that's the problem. Hey?
Yeah, I try to sit on my hands when I'm don't do anything weird with your hands.
Yeah, maybe that's not a bad idea. Okay. So anyways, back to blacksmithing.
I wave my hands around a bunch too, and I don't realize it till I watch a video and I'm let me just not. Sit on my hands.
it, it's not bad to weave your hands around a little bit. Don't bother me none. Okay, so back to the ironworking there, though. You're utilizing a lot of these forms on sheet metal, and then you're also working with like larger stock too in a lot of instances, and drawing it out in different shapes and getting weird bends and stuff in there, right?
Yeah. So I work a lot with flat bar right now. So between inch and a quarter by quarter, sometimes inch and a half by quarter, down to like half inch by quarter. Those are pretty standard sizes, like inch, three quarter, inch and a quarter. Those are all like kind of standard, because I can get like a visual thickness where it's like wide, but it's not super heavy. And then I can treat it like it's like a pencil line, so you can make your line thicker or thinner. And I like to be able to change the stock thickness, so it goes from real wide to real skinny, and then it'll get again. But like same material, I think that's like cool. I mean, I would work with larger stock sizes if I had like more equipment to work with larger stock sizes. Yeah, I mean, if you give me space and stuff and equipment, I will take over everything.
Okay, so given everything you could possibly want to work with, what are you going to start making?
I mean, I think if I had more equipment that could handle larger stock with tooling under it, I think the scale of my work would go up.
At that point, you're not really making wearable items, though, right?
I think I would need to make them wearable anyway. So then I would just put them on like casters and stuff like that.
Weirdly, yeah.
I am fighting with that, where I do want to go like bigger, and then I'm like also like things are heavy. But I really just love things being wearable.
It's what about moving into using mediums like aluminum or?
Yeah, I've thought of aluminum and stuff, and I have minimal experience with aluminum, but it's not out of the question, because you can get your mass without the weight, but also it like forges way differently than steel. It gets like squishy, like it has
I actually just read, I can't remember where it was, right up today, about why aluminum is so, it was somebody that had aluminum railing, it was a post about aluminum railing and how it's one of the blacksmith's secrets out there, that working with aluminum is so much better because it heats up a lot faster. It takes way less energy to forge it, and it's a lot lighter, so it's a lot easier to manage as well and to make larger forms out of it. And it got me to thinking, like, yeah.
I think it's probably easier in, like, a way, but also it doesn't, like, when it heats up, you have to, like, check the heat. You can't, like, steel, you're like, it's getting hot, and you can see it coming up the temp. Like the aluminum is like, you're like, is it the thing? We buffered
it. Totally. It's exactly what it is. I wonder.
You're like, no, it's fucking mush. Fantastic. Aluminum love it. Would
forge through one of those electronic forges that they got nowadays there that work off of like electromagnetic waves, because aluminum's not conductive, right? So, well, I don't know. It's conductive. What am I thinking? It's not magnetic. That's what I'm working for.
The induction forges, is that what you're talking about? Those are super cool. Those are cool. I taught out of those in Tennessee. And then I think also when I was teaching up in Maine, I was like, oh, cool. But you have to hit the pedal to make it do the thing. And I kept sticking it in there like, duh. And I was like, wait, oh, yeah, forgot the pedal. But it's like so clean. I was so clean. I was the cleanest I've ever been in my life after like teaching with those things. Like I was like,
not. The only problem is working large stock on them. Like if you want to do like large flat bar and stuff like that, then it gets to be a little bit.
They have all different kind of like little attachments and stuff too. There was like a little taco-y one. There's all, I don't know. They're kind of cool. Buddy, they're pretty cool. I don't know.
My buddy at Clairon Forge is one of the guys that makes all those different attachments, and he's got like a whole crazy lineup of ones he makes. He even has a wand now. He's got like a portable wand that he made so that you can move onto like railings and stuff to do work.
That's could be called the Harry Potter. I hope that's what he markets that
I don't know,
as.
But that's brilliant. I love it.
You're welcome.
Actually, and you know, if you're ever interested in finding other blacksmithing supplies, I don't know if you've ever heard of Maritime Knife Supply or not. Oh, lady, come on now. The Maritime Knife Supply is literally your one-stop shop for all the blacksmithing supplies, knife-making supplies you could possibly need. Okay, maybe not so much blacksmithing supplies, more knife-making supplies, but he literally has a ton of blacksmithing supplies as well. Hammers, tongs, kilns, 2x72 from Broadbeck Ironworks. He supplies that. Grinder belts, buy a 10-pack, save 10%. You'll get 10 belts for the price of 9, sorry. And you can also use the code FSCKILN at checkout. Save yourself $100 on Even Heat or Paragon Kilns. I did bring up kilns, right? Yeah. So it's got.
I heard the word kilns. Did say kilns.
FSCKILN. That's the code you want to use. Save $100.
Yeah. Sounds like a good deal.
You can't beat it. Actually, Lawrence has amazing deals, and he will most. No, never mind. I'm not going to go there. I'll have to edit that out. I was going to say something that I can't promise anything. Sorry. You know,
he'll give you free.
Well, a certain time of year is coming up soon, so you know, start getting prepare for it. Is what I was getting at there, if you know what I mean, right?
Certain gifts, offerings, yeah,
exactly. Well, I mean, the good old Black Friday sale's coming up soon, you guys. So prepare, right? Get ready to drop all of your monies at Black.
All of your three monies.
Go scrape the couch on blacksmithing supplies and Maritime Knife Supply. You can't go wrong.
Hey,
do you use linseed oil at all? Okay.
Color
linseed oil. Can't beat it. It's handmade here in Canada. Guys put the seed to ground in Saskatoon. The two brothers that farm this stuff, press the seed, make the oil, food safe. Trust me.
Sounds like I want to
drink it. It'll make you happy. Trust me. Rub it all over your wood. I do.
I mean, you do you.
Oh, I do that. And I also use the code ForgeChat10 at checkout to save myself 10% on orders $50 or more.
Nice.
Your enthusiasm is amazing. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely picking up the leg hard now on my end.
No,
it's just pixelated? Like a little bit choppy on our back and forth is all I feel like. You're out, but if you're it's the video. There's lag in the video. There's no pixelation. It's just lag in the video. And I'm just.
That's just me. I just lag after 8:30 p.m. I start lagging. So.
As long as I'm not speaking over you, I apologize if I'm speaking over you.
Okay. Oh, no. I grew up in a family of 400 people. The only way to talk was to yell on top of everybody else. So.
Okay. So fashion world. You're deep into this fashion world. I don't know what brought you into that, but it's freaking cool that you brought iron to the fashion world the way you have. And it must have been some like a difficult thing to get people to kind of to accept at one point in the fashion world. And I don't know, have people even at this point accepted in the fashion world? Are you fighting that?
It's still like a weird crossover, I feel like, since I've been doing this work for, I don't know, 12 years probably. So when I started, 12, 15 years, I don't know. When I started doing it, since I was definitely heavily in the arts and then the blacksmith stuff. And then there was like pretty heavy separation between like craft and art for some reason. Like there was like the craft people who did their technical stuff, and then the art people were doing whatever the art people were doing. And I was kind of like mushing the two together. And then I don't feel like either area knew what to do with me, because I work in several different mediums anyway. And then the fashion stuff came about because of the blacksmithing. So I didn't get into fashion before blacksmithing stuff. I went from blacksmith stuff to fashion. And as one does.
Right. And, you know. Sure.
Yeah. As a normal person would. And then once I started doing fashion stuff, then that was like a whole other like world of stuff that I wasn't, that I didn't know, that I didn't really fit in, because what I was doing wasn't fashion for sale. I wasn't making things to sell, and I wasn't building a brand. Like usually fashion, the goal is to like build a brand and sell your brand and market it to somebody, but I wasn't, I'm not interested in building a brand because I'm not marketing it. And then after doing a different runway show, like group runway shows, which are generally kind of expensive to participate in. A lot of the fashion shows, you have to pay to play kind of thing. And I didn't do them unless the runway show sponsored me, because I'm like, I can't drop several thousand dollars to like go do something where I'm not selling anything. So like I'm actively losing money. So I did some of those where they were sponsored, and I hauled all of my metal things all over the place. And then it was just kind of not how I wanted to present my work, because not only are you getting models in and out of things in such like quick, insane time that your models are walking for other people. So they're getting off the runway and then they're running over to you, and I'm trying to like lace them up in this metal to like shove them out on the runway. And it's just like, it was just like not what I wanted, because it just wasn't the venue and the space for it. So I stopped doing kind of the group runway shows like that once I was like, okay, well, I tried it and I did it, and that's not how I want to present my stuff. And then I did some solo runway shows, and then like a collaborative runway show with a friend that were a lot more performance based. So I had a friend write like 45 minutes to an hour of like original music for the show. So like he wrote the music and everything. And then it was much more of a performance, and like, it was like slow paced, and it wasn't like jamming the models out. Like the models weren't like running down the runway and like running back, and like people could actually like, you know, like watch it and experience it. And then for the shows, I integrated in like aerial performers. So like the aerial performers opened the runway show. So I was, just wanted to create like an experience. Like, you know, when you go to a concert, you're like there to, you know, experience the concert. But the runway shows that I was doing were like a lot more like traditional runway with the models in, out, in, out. And I was like, I don't want to do that. But there are designers that do performance runway stuff where it's like art, performance, and it's like stuff that like people look at and are like, why would you do that? Or who would wear that? Like, and it's not necessarily for wearing, because you're creating essentially like performance art more or less, but with like high levels of craft, not just like, oh, look, here's me rolling around on the floor, which is kind of like what performance art gets like a rep for, because like artists will do some fucking dumbass shit like that. And so like when I say performance art, I'm like, okay, so you're drawing with a crayon on the wall for an hour? And I'm like,
well, I actually started envisioning burlesque shows, and I know Celeste brought this up, that a burlesque show dominatrix kind of thing would probably be right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, burlesque show would be fun fun thing to like incorporate into like the grand scheme of things. We had like a belly dancer the one time. We had her open it with the aerial performers. So I do generally like dance and performance kind of things. So like the aerial silk performers are super cool. So I kind of like to find people that are like good at different things and we can combine our superpowers almost.
Well, I get it too.
It's definitely more of a performance because like I don't make all the stuff that people kind of like know my work for is stuff that I'm not like actively making money on. Like people aren't contacting me to like make things for thousands of dollars.
Have you? You know?
Like I occasionally get commission pieces, but they're from like regular people performers. They're not like famous people paying like $50,000 for something. They're like normal, like burlesque performers or sideshow performers and stuff like that. They're like very normally people.
Well, I mean,
if you're setting yourself on fire, you're probably not normally, kind of but normal. Like are kind of normal that don't have 50K to spend on like some Grindr gear bra.
Have you ever managed to sell one of your crazier pieces to somebody or
I think I've sold smaller pieces, but I never make the work with an intention to sell it. I kind of make it based on whatever crazy ideas are in my head and then I make it to what I want, so then I'm not trying to cut corners or like worry about cost or worry about like time. If I'm doing a commission piece, obviously I'm thinking of time and how to like make it within this budget and like get it to the person in whatever amount of time. But with my own stuff, I give myself a little bit more like leeway of like, oh, let's fuck around and find out with this technique and see if this works. And then, oh, let's push ourselves like this, or let's do like a collaborative thing that like pushes us to do something a little different. So I give myself some space to just I guess play around, but I never have the intention to sell it. I mean, I have like a lot of big, large drawings as well that I just have prints of, and sometimes I sell those.
What about non-functional pieces? Just like standstill sculptures and stuff like that.
I mean, I can do those on commission and stuff, but I don't.
You don't envision them normally?
Yeah, I don't usually do. I mean, I do some like smaller sculptures and stuff. I'll do some ceramic pieces still, but they're usually related to like my teaching.
This could be a weird question, but
nothing is right, weird at this point.
when you envision, if you close your eyes and start to envision your work, where does your mind start to go?
When I think of the pieces, I see them as like collectively together. So I see a bunch of the pieces in the same space. So like I build all the pieces individually. Like I think about each piece as like a finished piece on a person. And then I think of like, okay, like how many pieces can I have in a collective space together? So like having them individually is cool, but having them all together, especially with like all my drawings up and everything, is like a whole like experience. So the last solo show I did right before the entire universe imploded in like 2019 or whatever. what? It's still 2019, right? Nothing happened. We're all just 3 years younger. It's totally fine. Well, right before the entire universe imploded, I had a retrospective solo show. I can give you a link for it, which was cool because I got to have all of my drawings and all of my metalwork on mannequins on platforms for the duration of the exhibition. And then for the opening night, I had women in the metal on the platforms for opening night, which was cool. So I see it going more that direction. And the more people I can put in the metal, the better, basically. The more extra we can be. Because I like to push it in the metal work, but like also the photography and like stuff like that. So I have a really great photographer, Joe Hodden, that does like a lot of my photographs. And then we shot some of the pieces underwater, which was pretty crazy. Because I was like, well, what happens if I wear this copper piece underwater and we shoot it? And then I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I built a copper neck piece like a couple years later. And I was like, I made it out of copper and leather so it could go underwater. So then we shot that underwater. So I was like, all right, how do we push the limits of like what we can physically do, but then also like what our bodies can
physically
do.
Where do you go for an underwater shoot like that? In ocean water, lake water?
Yeah, no, we would die in ocean water. I don't swim that well. Oh, okay. Swimming pool. His mom's house has a swimming pool. So we usually shoot in the summer in the pool. And I'm not really much of a swimmer. So it takes a lot to be like underwater in metal and trying to like not blow bubbles, drown. And
you might not have the swim part down, but you've got the model part down, right?
Yeah, you gotta, and then not float too much into the
deep. You also did a bunch of work with Rick Frain recently too, eh?
Yeah, he does a lot of my pinup stuff. So he did also, there's like the five Ellens picture in the shop where it's like five of me, or it's like four of me working on one of me in my dress, which is a super cool image. People don't realize that that's like all me. So like, I like to work with different people for different things. So you got to find your people. I always emphasize that.
I started following Rick Frain because of you. I saw that you two were working together and I checked out his work and I was like, damn, dude, heck yeah. I like that work. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, he's a badass artist as well. So find your people and then they're stuck with you forever and ever.
I like that, man. I've got a circle of people that I adhere to quite a bit. So
yeah, once you find like people to collaborate with or people that can like take your vision a little bit further or to push you a little bit further, then like those are kind of your people.
Who are some of the other people that are in your circle?
I have different photographer friends, and then I have like friends that are like more fine art painters, and then a bunch of blacksmithy people.
Who are some of the
I like social media is good because you can keep an eye on a lot of different stuff that's happening.
I know you and Dennis Dusek get along fairly well, eh?
Yeah. I have a lot of Dennis tools. I was like, oh wait, I don't have any Dennis tools here right now. I have some appropriate Dennis tools in my shop.
What about the potato?
Have the potato.
Do you seriously? Oh my god. What the fuck's the story behind the potato, dude? Like, what the hell? Inappropriate. This is why we don't film.
It's a potato. It's in a, we have to describe it to the viewers. The potato is in a blue tape thong some googly eyes.
Looks like a crotchless thong.
It's been around. It lives in my purse. It needs probably new underwear. It's fine.
So, okay. Why? What? I know that this goes back to something, but I don't know what.
Nobody knows. Well, it goes back to the photo shoots, actually, because my friend Jess, that we shoot together all the time, got me the potato. Then I started traveling with it as like a joke and then posting it on social media, and then social media took it to like a whole other level. So now I have to travel with it. And now it has its own merch too. So you can buy potato merch as well.
Oh, where do people get potato merch from?
It's on Redbubble somewhere. But also I have pins as well. So if you can buy a pin too. So this is my special pin that I give people that help me out. And it says approved Forge Bitch on it.
That's awesome.
And it has my potato logo.
That's super awesome, bud.
So, yeah.
All right. Do you have a website that you sell stuff through? Or
has a what?
Do you have a website that you sell any of your stuff through?
My website is ellendurkin.com, and then my Instagram is at Iron Maiden Forge. So I do have some stuff up there, but usually I just get emails about different commission things. Or I think the potato merch is actually probably on my website because I was smart and I probably did that at some point.
There you go. Cool. Where is this going? What's the plans with all this? What do you have going on in the future? Or where do you want things to go in the future?
I want to do more performance runway shows in possibly an elaborate setting. That would be
like Vegas kind of ideas.
No, more like cathedrally kind of.
Oh.
Like regal vibes kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, either the camera slowed way down when you just did that with your hair, or you just did that like super slow with your hair and it was like picture perfect.
Hit slow-mo mode. I put my video in 80s mode and I did a hair flick and then it was just like slow.
I was just like, whoa. That was awesome.
Yeah, we just timed it that way. We timed it like that.
Perfect.
Try.
Well played. Man, cathedrals. That would be freaking crazy. Have you, like, would you ever accept your work going into like Hollywood kind of stuff? Like, would that be something?
I mean, yeah, if people contact me. The problem with like Hollywood stuff is that they usually contact you like 1 hour before they need it. And then like, could you ship it yesterday and make it yesterday? You're like, but you contacted me today. And there's like a weird turnover where they don't plan super well. So yes and no, but also like depending on what it is, like I don't have the physical capability to crank out some things in like 1 hour and then drop ship it to them in like 2 minutes.
If things got tight on you, you got a friend that you would call up to come work with you right away? Or
I mean, I've never been put in that situation like that, but yeah, I could probably like call if there was like an actual job that had actual like real money.
Who'd you call?
Then, yeah. Well, who's close to me here? Well, my friend Derek that I work with on the Man at Arms show, he would probably.
You were on Man at Arms?
Yeah.
What? No.
Yeah.
What did you do on Man at Arms?
I don't know. Made some big ass shit.
What the fuck? How do I not? I don't ever remember seeing you on there. Was that in
the old episodes and like the newer ones? Years. I don't know.
Like back when it was Ami or
still Ami.
Okay, so but there was a changeover at one point, right? To change from Battlemore Knife Shop to something else, right? Or am I wrong?
Man at Arms Reforged, that's what it is.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay, so I definitely watched the older ones when it was like Ilya.
Yeah, Ilya and Matt now have their own
show,
which is cool too. But like I know I do some of the stuff when I don't know when they call me in.
So it's Derek
and Intense for filming as well.
What's Derek's last name?
Kempinger.
Okay.
Derek. Derek's gonna be like, why don't you know my last name?
too many people the brain.
Kemper. Like I see like the letters and then my brain just puts them in different places.
You do that too, hey? I thought it, what do they call that, dyslexia?
Yeah.
I've my whole life been terrible with names like that. Like, I'll be like, our friend, one of the guys from the Manitoba Blacksmith Guild, Sean Van Bessler. For the long of the time, I was calling him Sean Van Beesler, and everybody's like, where are you getting this from? I'm just like, that's how it's, look again there, dude.
I'm like, I don't know, the middle letters got all jumbled in my brain, and then I made something up. I'm sorry.
Welcome to my brain.
I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'll just do that in my head.
Yeah, it was halfway through squirrel.
Yeah. I'm like, what? I don't know what's happening anymore. It just gets worse, though.
Do you have an obsession with keeping things organized?
No.
You're terrible at it?
So I'm pretty good at being organized enough to get through all of my projects. So like, I have to organize all of my workshops and my demos and my flights and like my schedule and all of that.
Oh no, that's a different type of organization. That's organizing life. I mean like material items.
Like material items, like in my shop, you mean?
Yeah. Like everything has its place and you like it to be there. And if it's not there, it makes you upset.
You mean the floor? You mean things that I can trip over on the floor and almost die to death like that? So usually if I'm in the middle of a project, there's like a shit everywhere and everything's all over the place. And then once I like wrap up that round of the project, I do like a deep psychopath clean on the shop. And then I'm like, ha, it's so clean. Time to destroy it again.
Okay.
And then like during the deep clean, I find everything and I put it back in its place. But in the middle of a project, I have like, I don't know, tongs that I've carried across the shop and like left somewhere. And then like tongs that I've like, I don't know, brought outside and left somewhere. And then like, no. So the short answer is no, it's not very organized. So yeah.
That's I think that's about right. I think you're getting it, you're within the right realm of exactly how it should be.
I think if you're like a machinist or an engineer type, then your shop is probably put together. But in the middle of a project, I have like kind of a little bit of tunnel vision where I'm just like, this is what I'm doing. And then I'm like, where's the thing? And then I'm like, can't find it. And then I pick like up another pair of tongs to use it. And then I'm like, throw those somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I guess part of the reason I bring that up is cleanliness in the shop is one of the things that I'm like adamant about, but I'm also like, I also have a day job. I'm not making money. Like, why? Not using my shop as a business right now, right? So when I'm in between projects at the end of every night, I have that time that I can keep it clean, and I like to try to keep it clean. But saw somebody else with a little bit of a dirty shop, and I gave him heck, like, hey man, clean up your shop, it's a bit of a mess there. And he's like, I don't have time to clean up, I only have time to make money. It's like, okay, all right. But I think there's a side to that like, at least at the end of the project, like you were saying, like at the end of your big projects, do a hardcore psycho clean and get everything back in
its place. Yeah. I don't like things to be like chaotic. Like my living space, I don't like to be like chaotic and messy and stuff, but like my shop space gets a bit disheveled.
Okay.
And sometimes you set a bucket accidentally on fire under your table while you're welding. So, and then you're like, oh, maybe I should move things.
Yeah. Well, that is like, I was in a shop not too long ago where I got major anxiety being in there. And I was like, I don't know if I can be in this again, man. It was like, it's a very small shop and very cluttered with a lot of things in there that could catch fire. And I was just like, dear Lord, I can't handle this. I'm too, I don't know if it's OCD or what it is that makes me kind of get that anxiety when I'm in a space like that. But
yeah, no, my shop's not like grossly like you're going to die in there. It's just like, like I pull the torches out and then I have the welders out and then like you know, stuff's, you're not going to like instantly die. I mean, you might trip over something, but you know, it's fine.
You're using oxypropane or oxyacetylene for a torch?
Yeah, I have oxyacetylene, okay. But I have this small tank, so they like to make shotgun noises and stuff. So that's fine.
Yeah. I haven't filled my acetylene tank in a few years now. I'm thinking I'm going to sell it, but I've been wanting to move to oxypropane. And my understanding is that through oxypropane, I can get away with utilizing a lot of the same stuff that I have for the oxyacetylene setup. I have to change a couple of things. So that's why I haven't gotten rid of it yet. But acetylene is expensive. And I'm sure with your work.
Yeah, it is expensive. And then like, I'll use the rosebud torch to do like adjustments on things.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, who like the little my money?
Yeah. No kidding.
No.
See, that's where we need the video for those facial expressions. That was something else. That was quite the facial expression.
I'm very expressive in my face. So it's probably better that there is no video. But I did shower, though. I'd like people to know that I did shower after the shop. Sat down to do this.
So. You follow the blacksmithing rule, shower at least once a week?
I try to shower more than once a week because I am not a boy. I think boys can be like, yes, this filth is fine.
I
roll around in my...
I have to shower twice a day or I feel just disgusting.
Yeah, I definitely have to shower after being in the shop.
Yeah.
I cannot do the conferences. People like camp at the conferences and are like outside and doing foraging and then they're sleeping. I'm like, no.
Oh, God, I'd be disgusting. So disgusting. Yeah. I would just feel disgusting myself, like, ugh.
Well, it's not just me, then.
I mean, as much as I've wanted to do that, where I go and camp the conference and, like, whatever, but I'd be like, okay, I need to duck out for, like, an hour. I'm going to go get, I would literally spend $100 to get a hotel room just to go and shower. I would do that.
No, anytime I do any conferences, and I'm like, Ellen does not camp, and I don't care if that makes me a princess, but I'm not foraging all day and then sleeping on the ground in a plastic bag. That is not fun for me.
Oh, there's a good chance I would forgive the plastic bag or forego the plastic bag because I would just drink enough beer that I just fall asleep wherever in one of the like pavilions or something.
The best option for camping.
Well, and that would be the whole reason why I wouldn't get a hotel room. I mean, I guess you can get a cab from some of those places, but man, usually they're not like right beside hotels or whatever, and having to get a cab to it's going to get kind of expensive, right?
No, I'm like just hotel.
Have you ever seen what Center of Metal Arts has?
Yes.
Been there?
The Center of Metal Arts in Johnstown, PA? Yeah. Yeah, they have an excellent facility. Abana did a conference there, what, 2 years ago? Because I demoed, so that's I was there for the demo.
Oh, no way. Okay. Sweet. So you got to use a bunch of their big equipment that's there?
Well, no, not in their shop. The Abana conference was separate, but you could tour the shop, which has pretty excellent facilities.
Actually, speaking about Abana, they have their 50th anniversary coming up right away. In 2024, June 6th to 9th, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, Artist Blacksmith Association of North America is celebrating their 50th anniversary. The event's going to have a team forging competition, live demonstrations, opportunities for hands-on education and family activities. There's going to be tons of stuff going on here, you guys. Go to abana.org/50th anniversary because there's going to be tons of stuff to find out about this event on that website, you guys. Sign up for it. Head on down. You do not want to miss this one. 50th anniversary with Abana is bound to be one of the best ones out there for sure. Make sure you go to this one, you guys. Hey, guess what? Back to the show. Do you draw all your work before you make it? Or?
Yes. I do a lot of drawing of things before I get started. And then while I'm making it, I do a lot of drawing in the process to break down different shapes. So I'll go from I always say go from big shapes to small shapes. So whatever shape that you're starting with. So if I'm making like a skirt or something, I start off with maybe I want a round skirt or maybe I want more of a triangular skirt. And then I break that down into separate panels. So then let's say the skirt has like 6 different panels, and then I'll break each panel down individually so it's less overwhelming.
Right.
Being like, oh, I have all this space to fill. So if you break it down to little kind of chunks, then you can sort it out. And then you're also probably, for me, is I'm repeating different patterns or repeating similar pattern, making things pretty symmetrical for a lot of the shapes. I'm doing mirror images of things, and then some of it's a little asymmetrical in places, so I decide where I want to like throw the symmetry or asymmetry.
So then once you've drawn all the images for your work, how do you decide what tools you're going to utilize to make that work? Do you have like a large array of different top and bottom tools type thing that you'll go to?
No. Well, I usually just use my hammer, okay. Like my crossbow and my hammer. Sometimes I use some tooling to do it, but I usually just end up using my hammer and then doing like some like rough forging, maybe on my tire hammer. If I'm designing a demo piece, I have to take into consideration like what tooling is available. So if I design something where I like need to use the hammer to draw out big sections or something to save time, and I don't have that, I either need like a striker or something. So there's different considerations that I have when I design pieces for like events, or you don't have a striker and you don't have a hammer. So you don't want to like, I don't want to design a piece that involves like a shit ton of like tapering. So the audience is like, yep, we're here for 7 years. Like,
tapering. Where do you like to do your tapering? On the horn, half on, half off? Where's your go-to for tapering?
Both. Sometimes I use the horn and my rounding hammer to draw it out, depending on what I'm doing, and then move to the face of the anvil. Sometimes I'll chunk it out on the tire hammer just to like get the material down. Because I don't know. I don't need to be doing all the hammering all the time.
You use a coal forge, so you get to utilize kind of localized heating when it comes to certain things like that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome for doing stuff like upsetting, right?
Well, it's good for doing a lot of things. Once your shape, I do a lot of shapes that end up being not straight. So like in the gas forges, even if the side opens, you're still getting like blasted with all of the heat and you're heating up like a big area. So with the coal is nice because I can isolate the heats in weird little areas and different scroll work or like whatever weird shape I have that I couldn't fit in a gas forge successfully. But you could do an induction forge, can isolate heats really well if you have the right tooling. But I have coal. That's what I have right now. So probably not super great for my lungs, but it's okay.
Do you have exhaust in your shop?
I mean, I have a chimney that works, you know, as well as the chimney works, but it's still
natural,
coal.
Natural so. Draw chimney.
It draws, but, you know, it's still like it's coal smoke. It gets everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things you gotta do, you ever monitor the carbon monoxide in your shop?
Oh no, I'm probably dead.
Yeah. I've been noticing for whatever reason my propane forge, when I light it up,
the door open, the garage door, I leave that open once I get the fire going so it's not drafting weird, and I leave it open, especially in the summertime, so I don't sweat to death.
Right, yeah. Well, I just did not forge almost all summer pretty much because I was like, nope, I'm not going to put myself through. I got heat stroke a couple summers ago and I was like not doing well with heat anymore.
Yes, I've been there. So now I walk outside and it's like really humid. I'm like, do I need to die today doing this? And I'm like, no, I don't.
You got it. So
I am too old to do this. This is a dumb decision, and I don't feel like being this type of dumb today.
Unfortunately, my wife noticed that I wasn't doing anything, so she utilized me to do dumb things for her instead.
In the air conditioning, though?
No, like in the yard. Yeah, in the sun. No, now I'm in the sun instead of at least in the shop in the shade.
It was like, so you don't want to be in the forage heat. How about you bake in the grass?
Exactly. Yeah, but to her, to give her benefit, she spends a lot of time in our garden taking care of the vegetable garden. So by all means, I was happy to help her out. So she's a champ for that.
Yeah, I try not to do things where I'm in direct sunlight. It ends poorly.
I could handle less sunlight. It'd be nice. I'm the type of guy, I'll stay up to like 4 o'clock in the morning in the forge, because late at night it's nice and dark. Everyone's gone to bed. Don't have to worry about nothing. No one's going to bug me. It's cooler at night, so I don't have to worry about overheating.
If you don't have any like noise problems, like if you don't have neighbors.
Yeah, my shop's far enough away from the houses that it's okay.
Yeah, that would be good. Then you can just be full vampire mode.
Yeah, well, and that's, I think about that when it comes to living in the city or whatever. I know a lot of people live in the city, and I'm kind of like pretty lucky where I am being in the city. We've got a 1 acre yard, so, and it's like a big city park behind us, so I don't have to worry about people. But yeah, living in the city's tough, eh?
Yeah, if I could not live in the city, that would be ideal. Yeah.
If you could move your shop anywhere in the world and just pick somewhere, where would it go? Where would you be?
I don't know. Somewhere in the woods, probably away from people. I would have a Victorian house in the woods with a nice shop, mostly away from people. And yeah, that would be ideal. And then I could just teach out of my shop and make things.
Teach the people that you don't want to that you don't want coming to your shop.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Those people are fine. Just like regular general people.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like only the people that are
normal people
be around can
those the other normal people.
Yeah. The others. We don't want the other normies coming by.
If you could, and I'm pretty sure Victoria probably asked you this question, maybe it's changed at this point. If you could pick somebody for one day, one night type thing, any blacksmith, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like people ask me this question, I should have an answer.
Yeah. I mean, who do you look up to in the blacksmithing world? Jeez.
I don't know. That's like a hard question to answer. I'll
throw out a few, names out there. Everybody. Everybody that I've ever forged with before, I'd want them all in the same room together.
No, that sounds terrible. That's way too many people.
You know a lot of people, don't you?
I do know a lot of people. I'm like, someone's going to be like, why didn't you say my name? And I'm like, hey.
I get that. Well, this is where you pick a dead person. That way you don't have to worry about it offending anybody, right?
That's true. Who's dead?
I'm terrible at this too.
Yeah, stop asking me terrible questions. I'm like, I'm bad with names. And you're like, name all the people you've ever met.
That's a terrible question. Shit. I took it down the wrong road anyways. Damn it. Okay, so what have you been listening to in the shop lately? What's your music selection of the week? If we had to ask you what kind of music you listen to,
that's equally as bad question.
Shut up, Jace.
I told you my brain started buffering an hour ago.
yes, we forgot about this. What do you like to like? What style of music do you normally listen to? You into punk rock?
No, I went through like my punk rock metal phase when I was younger. Now I do a lot more like indie kind of music, or some Sia or some Kaleo. Who else? Sometimes I revisit some other artists that I haven't heard of in a while. I generally switch it
up. You just dropped two artist names I've never heard of.
Sia. Sia is a... She's probably younger than me. She's definitely younger than me. I like her. She's cool. Kaleo is another band that I really like.
What's if I wanted to look them up on YouTube, which song would I want to look up?
All of them?
Oh, all of them. Okay.
I think recently, what's on my Spotify? What random things are on my Spotify? I Walk on Water. That's a Kaleo song, but they're an Icelandic band.
Oh, cool. That's why it's an interesting name to their band.
They're chill. I like chill things nowadays. I did used to listen to a lot of like death metal when I was younger in my 20s, and now I don't.
I definitely used to listen to a lot of metal when I was younger, and I don't seem to listen to it as much anymore. But
yeah, no, we have real reasons to rage, and now we're just like, we need to be chill.
Well, every once in a while, I like to put something on a little bit heavier. I mean, I still love my punk music. I won't lie. Or ska, anyways. I love ska. A little bit of brass always makes me shake my ass.
Oh, yeah. I had some that were, like, in the punk, and they always did their little punk dances and stuff.
But, yeah, I've a lot lately I've been throwing on the good old White Zombie album, and think one of my favorite songs on the last Sex Aristo album was I Am Legend. Super good song.
I'll try and remember that for 5 minutes.
At least 5 minutes. Come on, do me a favor, make it 5 minutes. Wait, that's what she said.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's call our quits, throw some sheepskin on this, wrap it up. The good old
No roo-coo-coo-coo-coo.
That's it. Good day. Awesome. Any closing remarks that you'd like to leave with?
Closing remarks. I don't know. Anything I said, I can't be held accountable for. All right, there we go.
Take off your hosers.